You're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. Good evening. I'm Al Vohner, and this, again, is this week's edition of The Public Eye. So nice to be with you this weekend. Hey, everybody knows that designing and designers really make life easier for us, make life more pleasant, and even aesthetically so. And throughout history, it is indeed the designing industry that has brought things to our everyday lives, like, as I said, that have made our lives so much easier. But what is it about the design industry? Is it a perfect science? Is everything that they had hoped for go the way that it should? Well, yes and no. And that's why I've asked my guest this week. He's author Manuel Lima. His new book is The New Designer, Rejecting Myths, Embracing Change. And for the next half hour, we'll be talking with Manuel about his new book and getting his input on the overall design industry and what impact it's had on all of us worldwide. Manuel, nice to have you with us.
Thank you so much for having me, Al.
This is I'm not a designer, but I do have an eye for things that I find aesthetically pleasing, whether it's a home, whether it's a piece of clothing, whether it's something that we use on a day-to-day basis, cars. But correct me if I'm wrong, there is very little that design does not impact in our lives, right? I mean, just about everything has a designer's label on it.
Absolutely. I mean, everything you probably have around you right now has been somehow designed by someone, right? And so it's not so much often about aesthetics, and I think that's something that designers feel offended about at times, because design is much more than aesthetics. It's really about how it actually works. It's about the function of a given object, being physical or digital, right? So when it comes to that level of making lives easier for humans, yes, everything we touch, everything we use on a daily basis has been conceived and designed by someone with that function in mind.
Now, I know in your book, and I found it very interesting, and I have to say that I agree, that if you're a designer, you would think that the first and foremost thought in your mind is, okay, I'm going to design something that's going to make not only people's life easier, they're going to enjoy it. They're going to find that this is a vast improvement over what was. But in the book, again, you argue that that may be the norm, that maybe should be the way it is. But sometimes you get people, and I know this from, and I don't want to be condescending because that's not the intent here, but sometimes you get the sense that people who are highly creative, not all, but every now and then someone will just say, it's my way or the highway. This is the way it's going to be, even though it may not be the best approach to something that would benefit, you know, the vast majority of people. Am I going outside my boundaries here? Am I not getting it right?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, again, taking your analogy of, like, you know, looking around you and seeing so many things that have been designed, some of those things, as we know, have been really well designed and give you a lot of pleasure and satisfaction. Other things, and we certainly can, you know, top of mind, recall some of those experiences, are not that well designed and actually gives us a lot of frustration, anxiety, and stress, right? So, and I think I address some of those things in the book, and of course there are countless examples of badly designed objects that surround us. But I think I'm really focusing much more on the ones that have been irresponsible by designers. And sometimes it is, I would like to believe it's often unconsciously, right? Designers are not, you know, evil by art and trying to do bad things. But there are multiple reasons, and we can talk about those, as to why we create irresponsible designs that are either bad for society, for individuals, right, causing things like anxiety, dependency, but also bad for the environment, right? Causing, a lot of waste and really not thinking through as we should when it comes to, like, the long journey of a given design solution that ends up staying in the environment for way past someone's lifetime.
I like the fact that in the book you mentioned and you use the word compassionate heart, that a designer not only has to have a creativeness to him, but the other side should be a compassionate heart. And you alluded to that. You know, when you're going to design something, especially if it's going to be an integral part of people's lives day to day, you know, make it functional, but also make it something that they really find a vast improvement over what was, and that's not always the case. But going back to something that you said, what, in your estimation, you know, as we live and breathe right here today, the year 2023, what, in your opinion, what products, what items, what is it that may have a flaw that you think needs to be revisited? Is there a product? Is there an item that really stands out in your mind?
Well, I mean, I think a lot of the new tech products are causing a lot of harm in society, right? Research has only sort of unveiling some of the pieces there. I think if we go back to gaming has had, you know, a dramatic effect on human minds, especially young minds. There are clinics today in the UK, for example, already, you know, taking care of young adults and teenagers that go from a path from gaming to gambling, right? So if you think about some of the experiences we have in gaming today, especially if you have kids, you know, you see that all the time. Our games these days are meant to be a very gambling type of experience, in the sense that you have to pay more to unlock a given tool, a given weapon, a given package to go to the next level. So it's a very gambling type of, like, give and take type of experience, right? And it's meant to, of course, engage the user, but it's also meant to addict the human mind. And of course, a lot of the social media is using a lot of these gaming sort of techniques and approaches that have played a critical role in the past to keep us in the loop, right? Keep us engaged, keep us motivated, and keep us, like, giving more data, personal data, and sometimes money. So that's a very sort of pernicious sort of cycle that you see happening. And it's of course worrying enough if we are doing this to our fellow adults, but when we do this, when we explore the human mind, especially in kids, I find that's really, really concerning. And designers are very much involved in some of these experiences meant to keep users engaged and always on, and again, addicted to whatever that experience is.
I'm so glad that you said what you said, because in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, okay, my lawnmower may not be as good as the guy next door, and he has a new feature, but, you know, it's not world shattering. But, you know, Manuel, I hear this from a lot of people that, yeah, the advent of social media, the advent of technology, in many ways has enhanced our lives, but, you know, now we're a couple of decades into it, and it keeps advancing. But I think you're right. I think, especially among young people, you know, whether they see something online, whether it's TikTok, something that was created, as you said, by a designer, has, and for lack of a better word, you know, sort of lured certain people. I mean, there's always an alluring. It has to be something that's alluring to get any of us interested in something, but it can take certain people, not all, but certain people can be led down the wrong path, and that's when you want to put the brakes on and say, whoa, you know, maybe we should have looked at this, you know, from a different perspective, and maybe we should have, you know, altered the way we were doing this, but and nonetheless, it's what you're talking about in your book, is the fact that, you know, designers aren't necessarily hostile people from birth, but sometimes the design, the idea, just, you know, they hatch the idea, they're so passionate about it that they run with the ball, but at the end of the day, you can sometimes take a step back and say, uh-oh, I should have thought this through a little bit more. But I just want to take a quick pause. I want to come back and get your sense on that. You're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. I'm Al Vona, host of The Public Eye. My guest this week is designer and author Manuel Lima. And we're talking about his new book, The New Designer, Rejecting Myths, Embracing Change. And Manuel, I got to give you credit, because I think a lot of people would say, hey, Manuel, you're one of us, especially designers. You know, there's no need to find anything wrong with the design industry. But, you know what, though, Manuel, correct me if I'm wrong, but if you're not going to be critical, if you can't take a step back and look at it with clear, wide open eyes, then they'll never be changed, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I think ethics is, at the end of the day, personal, right? It starts with you individually. And you have to take, I mean, the worst thing you can do if you are in this industry, in particular in the tech industry, is to not be aware of the problems you're causing, right? I think that's problem number one. If you decide intentionally to be blind to the problems, right, to the negative impact you might be causing on society and the environment, I think that's really on you, right? So I think it has to start with your line of questioning. You have to start questioning and understanding the full repercussions of the work that you're doing, which is hard sometimes. I will not say that, right? I think sometimes designers work in really large teams, and it's actually really hard, if you don't intentionally pursue that, it's really hard to actually get a sense of the full picture. What am I creating, right? What is the end piece that this is coming? Because sometimes designers are very focused on a small subset of the problem, right? A small part, a small component, a small pattern, and they don't actually see the full picture. But seeing that full picture is absolutely paramount in order to have the right impact you want in the world. And one solution that I like to get, and I talk about this in the book, is always think about the next context in mind, right? If you are creating a chair, think about that chair in a room. If you are designing a room, think about that room in the context of a house in a city, etc. So if you are creating an app, an application for a mobile phone, let's say that's used specifically if it's used by millions and sometimes even billions of users, which it really raises your responsibility to a whole different level. Think about it not just as an icon on the screen, but think about it as a full-time companion. People, we all spend more time with our phones than we spend with many friends and family. So what kind of companion do you want to have by that person's side?
That's an excellent point, because I very rarely see anybody, even if it's just held in their hands, but usually they're on that phone, and you're exactly right. This is my new best friend.
Yeah.
And you know, if it's not working the way I would expect it to be, then there should be some changes. But go on what you were talking about, because I like the fact that you're being open and you're not, you know, hiding behind some facade and saying, you know, designers, they've got it right. They don't. But let me just throw something into you. We learn over time, and I'm just want to, two things come into play as I'm listening to you. I'm thinking, okay, when you were in design school, should there have been some, or was there some responsibility upon instructors, the school itself, the curriculum, to set you on that path? And secondly, some people will say, especially when it comes to high tech, where's the government? Why aren't they stepping in? Just want to get your sense on those two things.
Well, those are two big questions. I mean, I think addressing the first one on design education, I think design has always been associated with art for quite too long. Even today, many design schools are, you know, part of an art curriculum of some sort. So I think that's generally where the problem might start. And then you'd see ethics being completely ignored or brushed aside completely, which I think it's tremendously responsible to continue teaching designers without a good sense of ethics and responsibility. Psychology is another sort of area that I don't think it's taught enough in design schools or at all in most cases, because it's really important that we really understand the human mind. And finally, ecology. Right, our responsibility towards the environment. I think those are areas also normally absent from many design schools and programs, which is, again, very responsible, because we are the main shapers of our material culture. And we cannot continue sort of designing and launching things into this vacuum of consequences, right? We are all paying a price for this in some way, shape, or form with what we have done in the past. So we cannot continue doing this, going down this path. Now, to your second point about should the government intervene, I think so, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think we are in this sort of a transition point similar to what the tobacco industry was, you know, a few decades ago. Mm-hmm. I think we are really in that transition point. I think there's a lot of wake-up calls now. There's more research pointing out the dramatic effects on the human mind of things like social media, gaming, and so on. And the governments are starting to wake up. There's still a lot of fear to face Silicon Valley because of all the jobs that it creates, all the symbol of progress and human empowerment that they signify. But I think you're starting to see change coming from society, from, you know, civil movements. I think Europe might be a little bit ahead than the U.S., I would say, when it comes to, like, you know, facing these big tech companies heads-on, starting with fines, but fines might not be the only solution. But I think we governments really need to wake up, and it's not just about this. You know, now we have AI just already here,
right.
And I think there's also an incapacity for governments and legislators to actually understand the full repercussions of what is actually at stake. And it's not really completely on them. I think even the people creating a lot of these new AI systems digital tools, they don't really understand the full scale of it. Let alone, you know, can you imagine even legislators understanding the full complexity of that system, right? So I think it's something that we need to address as a society. We need to really understand the kind of problems that we might be creating for the present and the future.
You couldn't have said it any better, because as I'm listening to you, I hear clearly the fact that, hey, you're excited about your product. You're the lead designer in a program, whether it's, you know, high tech or some other facet of our lives, and you get wrapped up in the moment, especially with a creative mind. I know this, whether it's even in radio. Oh, I got this great guest on. The book was terrific. You kind of get wrapped up in the moment, but at some point, somebody has to take a step back. And I agree with you, Manuel, that government doesn't always have the knowledge, let alone the wherewithal. I mean, maybe if they understood it more, but I don't think most legislators know the high tech industry or the design industry. So it becomes a difficult move for them to make any suggestions or any rulings that may temper something. A perfect example, and I'm not knocking it, I just don't think it's been perfected, and that's the electric cars. Many friends have been buying them. I'm hearing more and more. Some states are mandating you have to have one by the end of the decade. But what I hear is, well, but there's not enough infrastructure. There's no place to, you can't just go from New England to California. You're going to make sure that there's enough stops along the way so you can plug in your car and recharge it. So those are some of the things that you were talking about, the energy and the excitement of moving it forward. But at some point, somebody has to be able to say, whoa, wait a minute. Have you worked out all the bugs, so to speak? And have you perfected it as best as possible? There's always going to be modifications to be made down the road. Go ahead.
Just to that point, I don't think, the model so far, even in the European Union, has been to, to charge large sums of money to these companies, which in the end of the day, they have another big check of money by their side. So it's not usually like the best way to go about. I think it's about limiting the number of what they actually can do in some of these tools, right? What I mean is, things and research will continue proving, like, how we are, creating these like gambling experiences with human minds. Is it about limiting the number of time that certain users can spend on this given tool? Is it about the specific evil techniques that they have to actually convince users to spend more money, what we call dark patterns? So I think a lot of these like evil practices and features, we have to start looking at deeply at what they are doing and imposing limitations on those, because those are the triggers that can really, that are really all about exploring the human mind for profit. And I think we should really, really be scared of that, because that's our ultimate sin, if we start exploring our fellow humans in such a way, especially the human mind, and not even to mention AI, which is a whole different ball game. But I think that's something where we need to start paying more attention when it comes to limitations.
I I'm not a high-tech person, but I couldn't agree with you more, because I have seen young people who are weaned, 14, 15, 16-year-olds who have had a cell phone since they were probably out of their diapers, four or five kids at a time walking down. In fact, I see it in my neighborhood, walking shoulder to shoulder, texting one another. There's no interaction, manually. It's almost like, hey, put the thing down and just talk to one another while you have that opportunity. But the other thing, and I want to get your sense on this. I mean, you took a large step in one writing the book, because you were very honest in your interpretation of the design industry. Hey, we don't mean ill harm to anybody overall, most designers, the vast majority of designers. However, somehow, somebody has to take a step back and realize that not everything we're pushing forward is going to benefit society the way we think it is. We have to rethink some of these things. So has that caused any fallout, any blowback to you personally from fellow designers saying, hey, Manuel, you're one of us. I mean, you know, you're kind of critical here. I mean, I understand it. I mean, how can you ever implement change if you can't be critical? But how about fellow designers? Do they kind of get on you?
That's a good question. I mean, I don't think so. I think on the opposite. I think, if anything, I've been getting messages from people saying, hey, finally, you know, someone, you know, spoke the truth, and this is exactly what I feel it's going wrong with the design industry, right? So I think it has been sort of that type of message that I've been getting quite often. I think also because there's no sense of blame in the book. I don't blame intentionally designers. First of all, designers are not the only ones doing some of these sins. You know, like if we're talking again about the tech industry, you know, every team is comprised not just of designers, but also engineers and product managers, and everyone has a role to play in this part, right? So it's not, designers are not the only ones to sort of like point the finger at. And the book is really not about pointing fingers. It's about finding a solution, becoming aware first, and then finding a solution to the problem. And, you know, this is a realization that I also came about just working in this space for quite some time in companies large and small. So you come to realize that designers are really well-intentioned, to your point, right? As a starting point, they really want to do good, and they want to have a positive impact in the world. So in the book, I really spent some time trying to understand why do they fall into this like moral failing, right? Why do they fail to like live up to their high level goals and aspirations? And I think there's multiple reasons, but one might be the desire to fit in. Design is so eager to like have a seat at the table that sometimes we just turn a blind eye and we fail to see what's actually going on underneath our noses. It's the concept of ethical fading or moral disengagement, when you disengage yourself from moral consequences, either intentionally or unintentional. And this could be by a desire to fit in, or actually quite often in the tech industry is to meet a given target, right? To meet a given metric. We have to achieve this by then. And that's normally a recipe for disaster, for things to go wrong from an ethical standpoint.
Yeah, I'm so glad you mentioned the word ethical, because that's really the key here, no matter what you do. But, you know, especially when something is going, as you said, is going to be rolled out, that's going to have a vast and wide impact, as social media and as technology has globally. It's not just the United States, as you've said, it's all over the world. And I'm glad to hear that, you know, because I know you speak all over the world, you know, before groups of designers, engineers, I mean, just people in general who just, you know, want to know, get your sense of things, and that they are in agreement, Manuel, that they understand that, you know, maybe we do need to step back and reevaluate each and every product. But, you know, the other side of the coin, and you know this better than most people, there's the economics. You know, right. Bill Gates is not where he is today because they were paying him, minimum wage to get Microsoft off the ground. I mean, the man became immensely wealthy, as many have. Zuckerberg, and I can go on and on with the list. And I know this is, you know, relegated to the tech industry, but it goes much further than that. But money is a big, big factor, is it not?
Oh, absolutely. It's the key driving factor. You know, if you take Instagram, for example, Instagram was born with this, like, again, lofty aspiration of becoming sort of this new Flickr. If you remember Flickr, I think we are roughly the same age, so we probably remember Flickr. But it was like this new age sort of like social experiment around sharing images and videos of you, your friends, and family, which is always a great sort of goal. But what it is really now today, and you see almost like the step-by-step process until we are where we are today, mm-hmm. Instagram today is a shopping mall. There's no other way of saying what it is. Right. It is a shopping mall driven by people's personal data, their own images and videos, right? It's driving that engine of monetization. So, Yes, absolutely. Business is what's driving a lot of these efforts. But at the same time, I think there's a possibility for changing the business model, right? The business model does not have to be always like profit at all costs. Profit at the cost of the human mind, profit at the cost of people feeling depressed, anxious, and even leading to suicide, as some of research has proven in young teenagers, right?
Right.
It doesn't have to go down that path, right, at all. We can be a business model made on sustainable growth, right, in actually making people feel good with themselves. Why not? I think that's why not aspire for something like that, and instead of creating the experiences we are still creating today.
Yeah.
And I think there's a great designer and researcher that I mentioned in the book that says that the business model has become the new grid, because designers are just so focused on those metrics, right? Achieving those metrics pertaining to this, you know, constant growth,
right,
and more traffic, you know, more signups, that is actually obfuscating their own sense of what impact is and what they should be actually be paying attention to.
I couldn't agree with you more, and I would urge, as we start to wind down here this evening, I can't help but tell people, and I'm not, people here, believe me, folks, even here at the station, people will tell you, I'm not the tech guy, but I understand the fact that design has so many positives, but as Manuel has talked about in the book, and it's very honest and open, is the fact that, hey, we do great things as designers, but at the end of the day, we need to evaluate, is it ethical? Two, are we approaching it the right way? And what impact will it have on society as a whole? Manuel, real quickly before we close out, the book is widely available, but if people wanted to pose questions to you directly, just find out more about your background and get more insight into the research you've done, is there a website or a way they can reach out to you?
Absolutely. They can just Google my name, and then surely my LinkedIn profile will come up. I think LinkedIn is probably the platform I use the most these days. Mm-hmm. I've kind of given up on Twitter over the past 2 years or so, but LinkedIn would be good. And, of course, my website is www.mslima.com.
Great. Again, the book is The New Designer, Rejecting Myths, Embracing Change. And I would urge people, you don't have to be a techie. You don't have to be an aspiring designer. I think Manuel's book was written for all people. I found it very insightful in the fact that it, you know, many of us sit here, especially older people, will sit on the sideline going, what's so great about being online 24/7? Give it a break. Manuel has really been very honest and very upfront and pointing out the fact that in support of design, there's also a lot of work to be done, which can enhance it and be a better design for humanity as a whole. Any questions about the broadcast, you can certainly give us a call here at the studios at WICN. Our main number is 508-752-0700. You can pose any comments, questions to me directly. I certainly welcome that. That's Al Vona, V-U-O-N-A, at WICN.org. For the public eye, this is Al Vona. Thank you so much for tuning in.